Hey everyone, this is Maddie Kay, and this is The Working Experience.
The Working Experience.
Route 93 North is almost at a standstill. It's a rough one out there this morning, snow and sleet.
There is no service on
the... Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Yeah, folks, we're going to be a few minutes. We have train traffic ahead of us. We should be moving shortly.
John, we need that report ASAP.
Where are we on that presentation?
Man, HR wants to see you.
Did you return that email yet?
We have a team meeting at 10.
You stay late, Bob.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
They're moving in a different direction.
And after the meeting, we'll have a breakout session.
Who ate my
Where are my hot pockets?
This microwave is disgusting.
Oh, God, what's that
He was clipping his toenails at his desk. I can't take it anymore.
All right, everyone. Welcome back. And I am sitting here with my friend, Pat Quinn.
What's up, everybody? How's it going?
Very, very well. I'm talking to Pat via Skype. He is in Austin, Texas. But I've known him. I went to college with his sister, Catherine. So we've known each other for a long, long time, though I probably haven't seen you in 15 years-ish.
I was going to say, yeah, once you started saying how long ago that might be, I'm like, holy cow, I've known you.
Yeah, a while.
Like, I've known you longer than I know my wife. Like, by a number of years.
yeah, true enough. So, you know, through the magic of Facebook, we connected, I don't know, a few years ago, and I always find it really creepy when they're like, celebrate your friendship with Pat Quinn on Facebook. I'm like, what? What did I sign? Or whoever. You know, like, your friendship with John Brancaccio for 5 years. I'm like, celebrate?
Yeah, well, I mean, they should know you celebrate our friendship every day. you don't need a reminder.
No, it's it's a celebration in and of itself.
Precisely.
So, Pat's... job is his website, Life of Dad. So if you could tell us a little more about that, it's interesting stuff.
Yeah, well, Life of Dad, it's a parenting website with a focus on the fatherhood side of everything. And it's a social media site, so anybody can join it, anybody can, you know, contribute or just lurk like a creeper. And it was started by my brother-in-law when his daughter was born with a congenital heart defect, and he started as his personal blog. And then over the years, it's just kind of evolved to what it is now, where we have a bunch of guys working on it. We have an app. We're coming out with another app that is going to run like alongside of it. And for the last few years now, that's been my primary job. I'm lucky enough to be able to work from home now, doing just Life of Dad. We have over 1.5 million followers on Facebook. We have a pretty big Instagram following, and because of that, companies want to pay us to do stuff, which is fantastic. So that's what I do now, and it's really nice. It gives me the freedom to do things like move to Austin in 1 month, which I did 2 months ago.
Nice.
My wife brought it up one day, and a month later we were here in a new house.
So you guys did you did the Cheerio thing, right? Was that your baby?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, the Cheerio challenge. That was probably the biggest thing we did in terms of like brand work. And it wasn't even initially supposed to be brand work. It was just something I did. It was the Cheerio challenge. I was sitting with my son, who at that point was about 6 weeks old, and I just started stacking Cheerios on his nose and thought it was hilarious. Like every time it fell, it was funnier and funnier. So I took a picture of the highest I got, which I think was 5 Cheerios stacked high, and put it out there to our audience, just saying like, hey, how high can you get it? And the next morning, some friends of ours from Australia, who are also writers and bloggers and stuff, they were like, yo, you guys are on the news out here. And I was like, what? And sure enough, within a week, it had blown up everywhere. We were on like the Today Show, every news outlet covered us. And I think it culminated finally in President Obama actually doing it in a BuzzFeed video for something about how easy it is to... things that are harder than registering to vote. And he was there doing the Cheerio challenge on a fake doll dog or something like that.
So wait, so, now you have to stack the Cheerios on someone else's nose, correct?
Yes, yeah. Like the idea was, if you have like a baby, a sleeping baby, that was the main thing.
Yeah.
Is to do with that. But then people started going rogue. People were stacking like donuts on their sleeping kids, or stacking. One guy stacked on his like pet snake, and it came out pretty well. But so it turned out to it became its own thing in and of itself. But then we wound up working with Cheerios because of it. We got in touch with them. We did a couple of different campaigns with them, and they're actually on there. If you look at their commercials, they have the Cheerio Challenge going now on their commercials. So Wow. That was something that was just started on a whim with me and my son Max. So it was pretty fun.
I find, we've really just done the podcast, and we've done some scripted videos that are, will go on the website, we'll eventually have, but I do find it is kind of like throwing 100 things up at the wall and one of them sticks and it's fun and people respond to it.
100%. We've tried so many things that are such utter failures, and I've humiliated myself for the biggest failures we've had. Like some videos we made, I was just like it's embarrassing to go back and look at it now, but I'm like, man, we've really put our all into that epic failure.
So can you,
and we failed so many times and so many things, but yeah, you just keep going and keep trying different stuff and hope it works, and if it doesn't, you just move on to the next thing.
Can you give us an example of an epic failure?
One of the more embarrassing ones we did back when Life of Dad first started, we were really concentrating more on video and hoping, because this is when YouTube was really that was the moneymaker,
Yeah.
Really go big with that. So we did a video of what the heck, I don't remember exactly what it was called, but the concept was, you're at a camp to become a dad, and to become a dad, you need to understand what it's like to be a baby. So at one point, we were literally crawling through the woods in Depends diapers and nothing else, and it's just so stupid. It made no sense. We did male breastfeeding too. We were sitting outside stores pretending to breastfeed our babies and putting them under the covers and catching people's reactions.
Wow.
Things like that.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, I'm like, man, those are really stupid. But so, then I do something like that, and then I just stack Cheerios on my son's face, and
right,
all of a sudden I'm in the news everywhere for it. It's
yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, so have you guys kind of, do you still create videos, or you do more just actual videos, not trying to stage things?
Yeah, now we've actually been really successful recently. We have a bunch of guys now who work on a video team. And because we have such a big following, a big audience, people just kind of submit their own stories to us.
I've seen that. Yeah. Yeah.
Things they have, fatherhood stories. And one of them was recently that really went really big. I think it's gotten over 7 or 8 million views on Facebook right now. It was just a guy whose son was born with, I forget, some kind of condition, and they weren't expecting him to live or walk. And now the kid's a few years old, he's able to walk. And it was just a story following this dad's, or the whole family's whole experience with their son, and how the dad really likes to take the kid out, and he's a performer, so he'll tap dance for his son and stuff, and the kid tries to dance along with him, and it's just a really touching video. So now things like that now are doing great for us. We also did one video where we had a bunch of dads across the U.S. Singing the Little Mermaid song, and in the video you don't understand why all these grown men are singing the Little Mermaid, the princess tune, until the very end, and then it's just you'll do anything for your daughters, or I forget the exact text on it, but that was another one that did really well. So
nice.
If we stay out of diapers, our videos tend to do a lot better. Surprisingly.
Well, let me put something in the background that I recall, and this may, I don't know, subconsciously have led you to the balancing of the Cheerios, that Pat can balance a canoe on his chin.
Yes.
Yes.
I can balance anything I can lift.
Yeah.
I can balance on my chin.
I have an image of you in my head balancing, remember the old cordless phones with the antennas?
Yes.
I remember you were balancing one on your chin when I was over at your parents' place one time. It's very impressive.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still bust that out every now and again. But it's funny when people I never do it anymore, and then every here and there somebody will be like, "Hey, remember when you balanced that couch in college?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, I totally did do that."
And now look at you now. You
know? Look at me now.
That's
it's
right.
Gotten me exactly nowhere.
That's right. Oh, No. I mean, the website, it's phenomenal. I remember when we were starting our website, I told John to look at your website, because I was like, that's what I want to do, the, you know, all the different, yeah, so it's a great model. The other thing I just want to throw in real quick, because I saw you comment on, I don't know, a friend of yours question about the best cover song that's better. I never comment on those things, but it's like, it's either as good or better than the original.
Yes. Yeah, I saw you commented on that, and I was like, wait, are we mutual friends? Like, how did you...
No, I just saw it come up in the little corner. What did you say?
I said, I had two or three. There's one, the Dum Dum Girls doing There's a Light That Never Goes Out by the Smiths, and also Kishibashi doing the Talking Heads' This Must Be the Place.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's good, that's good. I put Super Knot by 1,000 Homo DJs, which is by Black Sabbath.
Nice.
And I put pretty much Jimi Hendrix covering anything I really enjoy.
Nice. You know? Those are very good. Very good options.
You know, I tend...
Part of my blog is Because Life of Dad, you can basically just write about anything, and anybody can join and write on it. I do a weekly music article, too, so...
I've seen it, yeah.
These little obscure bands doing other ones, and I'm like, that was better. Oh, Sturgill Simpson doing The Promise. I'm sorry, but I'm just thinking of the right words to say.
No.
You do know it. It's an 80s song. You definitely know.
I may.
If it wasn't me singing it, but Sturgill Simpson singing it, doing his, like, slow country take of it, is absolutely amazing. It makes it, like, just transforms the song from this, like new wave pop thing to something, like, really deep and pretty awesome, so nice. Check that out.
I will. Yeah, send me the name of the song when you get a chance.
You got it.
Yeah. So the working experience is, well, I guess it's pretty much what it says. Like, I've never worked in an office, like a corporate office or anything like that, and the culture really fascinates me, because they've, like, in my mind, I mean, there's a lot of it that fascinates me, that, like, people go and stare at a computer screen for 8, 10, 12 hours a day.
It's crazy.
Fascinating. Like, that anyone has... I would be fired. And I'm not talking about out of some act of rebellion or something like that. Like, either through incompetence or laziness or just not showing up to work anymore, I would be fired.
Do like, what is it, Peter from Office Space.
Yeah, but not even that defiant. Like, I really... Like, if we were in the middle of a project and it was, you know, 4:30 in the afternoon, I would just kind of shut down. Like, I think my brain would shut, you know, I'd be like, I can't do this. Like, I cannot physically or mentally. Like, I admire, in large part, those people who can really, like, go to a job for, like, 10 hours a day and they hate it. They absolutely hate it. And they do it, like, they dread it. I read this statistic just, like, 4 days ago from Forbes. I looked this stuff up on, you know, online. They polled people. Now, this is Forbes. This is not, like, people who work, I don't think, at, you know, menial wage jobs. Because we don't really talk about that too much. You can just kind of take for writ that somebody is not jazzed about working at Burger King. But... Yeah. Now, these are people who make six-figure salaries. 70% of the people said they hated their job. 70%. Oh my God. 70%. And it's like,
Jesus.
How do you go to...
I can't grasp that.
No.
I'm like you. It's just like, if you hate it, then why are you doing that? Like, do you need the paycheck? Do you want to hate that much of your life? I would rather be a pauper.
I said I would rather, my go-to is, because I used to, you know, bag groceries. I worked at the Coca-Cola warehouse, you know, we just stacked crates of Coke. Like, I'd rather do that. I'd rather just go do that. And, you know, not have, like, because these people are also subjected to, like, daily, like, pressures and humiliations of, like, evaluations by superiors and things like that. And so, like, not only do you hate your job, but you're desperately clinging to it, and they may fire you at any given moment for no reason at all. Just
yeah, so it's like living in constant terror also
for a job that you hate. Which is like, I mean, if I was earning $1 million a year doing a job I loved, but it was, you know, really like cutthroat competitive, I could see that. But like,
right.
I'm going to grovel and beg to come back to this place that I hate. Like,
yeah. Not only that, but then also then you become one of these people who are like backstabbing and trying to climb your way by taking out others.
Oh, absolutely. And all of this results in, you know, really bizarre behaviors, because you also have like, you know, you can't say anything to anyone. You can't, you know, say anything inappropriate. You know, the line, the ice, I feel like, is always very thin. You know, people are accused of bullying. They're accused of harassment. They're accused of, you know, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And there's this human resources layer that's just there to like try to keep a lid on all of this. And it's just
that's a common, a lot of people think human resources is mostly there to help the workers, but they are there to protect the company.
Right. Yeah. And it's like a complaint, you know, someone makes a complaint, you say something, you tell what someone else considers an inappropriate joke, and they go to human resources, and it's like they've created this like atmosphere where no one can deal and no one's allowed to deal with anything head on. Like,
right.
I have this book that people write in about for advice on this and that. And one is, and there's all kinds of stuff on the internet about this, how to deal with an employee who smells, who reeks, you know, like who, like Ted comes to work every day and he reeks of BO. And my friend Nick has worked in HR. He works in a company here in Massachusetts now, that he's had to deal with that. Like, you know, an employee stinks and someone has complained, or multiple people, and Nick now had to sit down with the guy and say, you know, it's all about the code of conduct. It's all about the regulations.
Right.
And it's like, it's always like, it's not me, it's not you, it's the code. It's the handbook that we have to abide by. You know, like Regulation 32A states that all employees should bathe regularly. And this is literally what he's had to say to people.
Well, I mean, you don't want anybody in your office to stink, but you also need to have an IT team. So you've got to have a balance there. So.
Right. Yeah. Who I've heard are their own special folks. But, you know, like, I always tell the story because it fascinates me. It's one of the first ones I ever heard. Another friend of mine up here, John, was working for a company. They do, like, SEC compliance for companies. Like, clients are doing some financial whatever, and they advise them on being in compliance with SEC regulations, which really gets my heart pitter-pattering, because it's like, whoa. It's like, hang on to your hats, boys, because, you know. So there's this guy working in the office. He's like in his late 50s, early 60s, and he's like 6'7", and he's, you know, one of those guys who like never irons his shirts. Like, he wears a shirt and tie and khakis, but he's like barely presentable, I guess. You know, whatever.
He's doing the minimum. He's like, this is what you expect from me.
Exactly. Like, I'm not going to get in trouble for the way I'm dressed. But what he would do is, they had like a small break room with a kitchen, refrigerator, sink, whatever. And he would go in, take his shoes and socks off. He would put his bare foot on the edge of the sink and clip his toenails into the sink.
No way.
At work. So someone in the office called, their main office is in New York. So there's only like maybe 10 people in the office up here. Someone calls the office or sends an email to the office to the manager in New York, who then has to call up to the office to talk to Carl or whoever about not clipping his toenails in the sink. No one can go just confront Carl and be like, bro, what's up? Now, I mean, to me, and I've said this repeatedly on other podcasts, like, clipping your toenails in the communal sink is an aggressive act. Like, you're drawing a line in the sand.
Clipping your toenails in a communal anything. if it's a communal anything, you should not be clipping your toenails there.
I mean, you know, we talked about, like, you know, I brush my teeth at work sometimes. You know, I'm a teacher. I eat lunch. I'll go into the sink and brush my teeth. I do not floss at work. I don't really think that's appropriate.
That's very good of you.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Like, I just, and the whole clipping, like, I wouldn't clip anything at work. But then other people I know, like, they keep a fingernail clipper. And like, they'll clip their fingernails at work. I don't know. I just can't.
That's all very, yeah, yikes.
You know, I don't want to walk by someone's cubicle and see them clipping their toenails or their fingernails, you know, or dealing with. Yeah, I mean, someone else said he wouldn't brush his teeth at work. He thought that was kind of gross. So I was like, yeah, I can see that, because you are spitting used toothpaste into the sink. I don't know.
But at least there's you have an argument there. There's a balance. Like, do you want me to smell like Doritos all day or out of my breath? Or do you want, nice fresh mintiness?
Right.
I worked in a company one time where a guy was on, like, they hired people for 3 months where you're on, like, a trial basis, and then they'll eventually roll you in. But, like, any infraction really would get somebody bounced in that 3 months, no matter what. And this guy was, like, he was fine and just made, like, jokes here and there. But then somebody asked him, and this is, mind you, I was the one man in this office until this guy came. So it's a room filled with women, and he made a joke where somebody said something about, like, oh, what if your wife told you were pregnant? And he said something like, oh, if my wife told me she was pregnant, I'd get a gun and, you know, and make sure she wasn't having that thing. And the whole office, like, just, like, it was like record scratch, like, holy cow. Sure enough, next day, guy gets a phone call. Oh, yeah, I'll be there in a second. And then he gets up, he's like, oh, yeah, Bill in HR wants to see me. And we never saw that man again.
Wow. That quick. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you know, I probably wouldn't tell a joke like that. I wouldn't think. But I could easily see myself slipping if I got a little comfortable in the place.
Yeah.
And saying something that someone else considered off color or whatever. You know, I don't know. It's slippery slope.
Yeah. I had a complaint against, it was one against me and my friend Laura. We happened to be working late, and there was literally only one other person in the office, so we know who complained. But we were playing, we were just listening to some Flight of the Conchords music.
Yeah.
And I forget which one it is. At one point, he's just like, something about, like, it's like a lounge act song, and he's like, starts singing about, like, all the foxy ladies. And it's like, and one line is it like, it goes, hermaphrodite ladies. And we had a complaint put into HR for that, just because we had that song on. And my friend Laura was like, who could it have been? I was like, there's only one other person here. Of course it was Nancy across the hall.
So wait, what did they say? What did HR say?
They were complaining that it was, I guess the music was inappropriate or something like that. But if you know, I'm sure you probably know Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah.
Their stuff is always, like, it's PG-13 at best.
Right.
You know? So it was pretty funny that we had that complaint lodged against us for playing that.
I mean, did you get the sense that the HR person, like, understood this was not a big deal, or?
I didn't really have much of a sense one way or the other. It was more just like, hey, don't play that kind of music. And I was just like, okay. And that was the last time I played any music at that place, so.
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like I would play a song, and, you know, if someone said, oh, who's that by? And I said, 1,000 Homo DJs. Bang, HR's all
that's
over it.
Yeah, you're...
And I'm like, it's the name of the band. Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah.
What type of...
That was the only time, the only company I think I ever worked for where I, like, eventually all of a sudden realized, like, man, I just got to keep my head down and just not express anything in this place, you know, because it was just kind of like that.
Well, that's
weird culture there.
That's the thing, though. Like, that's what John has said. He's like, you know, you can't express anything. Like, you're a human being. Like, you sort of need to crack a joke or listen to a song or be comfortable around. I mean, otherwise, you end up like the Japanese salarymen. You know, just like going berserk and like lying drunk. I was watching a documentary on that the other day. I mean, it's nuts. But, like, I don't know. You're right. Like, you can't, you say something. Right. You feel like just don't say anything. Just don't say anything.
Yeah. And then that just makes you, like you're just saying, just drives you even more crazy. You know, you're already crazy enough staring at a computer for 8 to 10 hours a day and just really just doing drone work, same thing over and over and over.
Right.
But then if you can't even, if you feel like you need to suppress everything about you at the same time, ugh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And another friend who worked there who was tattooed, like, you can't even imagine. She was, I mean, like, down her legs, her arms, up to, almost up to her neck. And she came in every day and, like, dressed practically like a librarian just to make sure that she kept all that covered up because she didn't want to offend other people there. And I was like, man, that is just so sad that that has to happen. And she's the nicest person in the world. So cool, so awesome, a great worker, and super smart. But she just felt that she needed to be that, do that because of that kind of a culture, and that kind of sucked.
Well, and what I think it leads to, my cousin's husband, David, works for a hospital in Baltimore. He buys medical equipment for them, and he used to be on the other end for a number of years selling. So he works, you know, it's a very corporate environment, and he's a really good guy. He's a good sense of humor and everything. And he said this woman who works in the office, she has placed herself in charge of the refrigerator in the break room. Like, she just works there. She's not in any authority or anything.
Yeah.
But she's taken upon herself to regulate the use of the refrigerator. So, like, why would you, why, I every time I tell the story, I say, if someone said, hey, Matt, could you, in addition to teaching, keep an eye on the refrigerator in the break room and make sure it's clean and throw away everything on Friday? I'd be like, no. Like, what are you talking about? Why would I? I certainly wouldn't volunteer for it. I mean, like, you know. Yeah. So one time, so she left this note saying that anything perishable would be thrown away on Friday. Now, I would take that to mean, like, and most people did, leftover Chinese food, you know, whatever, like slices of pizza. Well, this other woman had put in a bottle of Thousand Island salad dressing on, like, Wednesday. She'd used it twice. This woman throws it away on Friday. Right? So she, the other one, the owner of it, comes in on Monday. She has no salad dressing there. And it's like, as David said, when you've been sitting in front of your computer from 8 o'clock in the morning till noon looking at spreadsheets, like, the only thing you've got to look...
of your salad dressing.
That's all you've got to look forward to. That's it. She's going to have her lettuce, and you can't eat lettuce by itself. So, just, and this woman throws it away. So this, apparently, I don't think it's been resolved yet, but it has created a mountain of tension. To the point where David had to, like, bring it up in a meeting that wasn't even about anything like that. It was about selling or buying hospital equipment. But he said, you know, that's the kind of stuff someone comes back to the office with a shotgun and starts exacting retribution, you know?
Yes, that's just, I mean, that is just, that comes down to just common sense, though. I mean, that, like, that is I'm mad for that person. That
me too
would have to happen, and that has to come up in a meeting. It's
right.
Ridiculous.
I know, and to have to be like, if I was an HR manager or any kind of manager, I'd be like, good Lord, like, we have other stuff to do. Why are you throwing away her salad dressing? Why would you do something like that?
Yeah. Seriously. Oh, man. I thought you were going to say something like it was a yogurt that was still sealed or something like that. But salad dressing, I mean, I have salad dressing in my refrigerator from, like, 3 years ago, from three houses ago.
Yeah.
It's moved with me.
Yeah.
It's right. It's probably still fine.
It's fine. It's fine. Like, yeah. Ketchup? Are you going to throw away the ketchup bottle every week? I mean, like, what? Where does
that
it end?
Is absurd.
So, I...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go. Go.
I was just going to say, the one thing that I actually had... something come up in a meeting, because of a complaint I lodged. I didn't even know I was putting in a complaint, though. I just happened to be really good friends with the office manager.
Yeah.
And I brought something up to her because she would leave out a bowl of, like, M&Ms every now and then, or, like, you know, peanuts and stuff like that. And this one guy, Mike, that I worked with, who now is like VP of a pretty big nonprofit in Southern California. I sat really close to the bathroom. I know when he was in there for a long time and he would come out and the whole place would stink, that he didn't wash his hands. Every time, so you could hear the sink. And then every time he left, he would go straight over to the bowl, dig his hands in, and pull stuff out, start eating it. So I went up to my friend, who was the manager, who had that bowl out, and I said, listen, like, if I were you, I wouldn't really be digging into this bowl of whatever you have out right now, because, I told her why, that Mike definitely doesn't wash his hands after he poos every single time. And so she threw it away, and then next thing I know, it came up in a meeting. They didn't specify, they didn't say, hey, Mike. They were like, so listen, guys, if people are going to be digging in my bowl, I'm expecting everybody to have clean hands. You need to wash your hands after you go to the bathroom. Like, she was talking to, like, 8-year-olds or something like that. These are, like, full-grown people, and she has to tell them in an office setting to wash their hands after they poo.
See, okay, now this makes what I found make sense, because I dig around online. I try to find stuff from HR, whatever. I don't have it in front of me, but at a law firm in San Francisco, human resources, somebody wrote this. It was etiquette on how to use the bathroom. This was a law firm. So you have to imagine people there are fairly well educated. They went to law school or whatever. And one of the pieces of advice I remember, well, a couple. One was, if someone's using the stall, don't peek under the door. Like, has that been an issue? Like, I usually peek over the door. I just, because I'm kind of tall. You know, I just look, hey, Ted, are you almost done? What's up, buddy? How's it going? You'd lower down, like you're dressed in a suit, you'd like get on the floor to like do what? Like, it was in the memo.
Amazing. So,
the other one that I recall,
I love it. If I ever did that and awkwardly did that, I would make it more awkward. I would just like maintain eye contact at that point. I'd just stay down there, keep staring.
Yeah, you're banging against the door, like you're kind of clumsy about it, you're sort of shuffling around down there. The other one, well, there were a couple. One was about washing your hands. Like, and again, this is an official memo from human resources to all of the employees in this law firm about washing their hands after they use the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, and the other one, the best one was, because I looked at it from a different angle. It was geared towards men. When using the urinal, do not look at the person next to you, because this could create an uncomfortable situation. I would throw in there, it could create an opportunity. I mean, you don't know. You know, I mean, just you looking over, hey, wow, Chris, I didn't know. Geez, you're really okay, buddy. That's
good. Nice dick.
Yeah, good stuff going on there. What do you, you know, you don't know. They may be swinging stuff these days.
Amazing.
Come on.
You don't get many opportunities to network, so
no.
You got to take, you know, your chances when you have them.
Well, one office that someone told me about, they were, I don't know how they would regulate this, but they said, like, employees should not have their phones in the bathroom, and it was due to, like, security something, I don't know. Basically, what it was is because, you know, a lot of the guys were going in there for breaks just to, like, look at porn on their phone. sort of clear their heads a little bit. I thought, hey, if productivity's up, don't rock the boat. Just, you know.
Seriously.
Good Lord. Just let people be people, you know? I mean, come on.
You know, this made me think. The guy who started Dilbert started it just a base off of his only, just like his corporate jobs. I think he was a lawyer, actually. And he started Dilbert and did this whole thing. Like, we need an HR person out there who's been in the business for a long time just to quit and just start laying out all the stories that they have.
Well,
like,
there's
in
this
humorous form.
This woman.
It should be amazing.
I'm looking at this book right now. It says, The Real Office, All the Questions You Never Dared Ask. And it's by Lucy Kellaway, who I believe worked in HR. And that's where I got the thing that one of these things is titled, How Do I Tell My Employee That He Smells?
Oh, that is so awesome.
And then
Lucy and you and I need to come up with a screenplay based on all that she has.
Oh, yeah. People write back. Like, I guess she compiled all of these. Like, one is, it just says, smell covered up. I once had a lovely, happy woman on my team who smelled awful. I didn't say anything, but got a can of air spray and freshened my office each time she left. And the guy I do the podcast with, John, he used to work at Morgan Stanley. He was on the trading desk. He was next to this woman, African-American woman. I believe she was the only female out of like 30 white guy employees. And she was the only person of color. John said, she's a lovely woman. She was in her mid-40s, good at her job. But after lunch every day, she would come in, take her shoes off, and unleash hell.
Ugh.
I mean, it was so bad.
Yikes.
And he went to HR, and HR said, we're not going to say anything. Like, there's no way we're even touching this with a 10-foot pole. So John went out.
Something you'll have to deal with.
That's it, yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? Like, nobody's going to take up that mantle.
Yeah.
So John...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, John, how he dealt with it was he wasn't going to say anything to her. So he went out to Dwayne Reed, and he bought all these like air fresheners that he stuck under her desk after she left for the day. And that's just kind of how he you know, it mitigated it enough to make life bearable.
That is great. For one summer when I was living in Southern California, I worked down at Delta at a San Diego airport, and it was like, it was an awesome thing. I could work for 3 months and then get flight benefits for the rest of the year. And I was doing freelance writing, so I had the time.
Yeah.
So it was awesome. But one time when we were down there, somebody was in line with this other woman. And when she went up to the counter and paid or whatever, did her bag and stuff like that, left, the other lady complained about her. She's like, that woman smells so atrocious. Like, I can't believe it. And then the other person who was dealing with her mentioned the same thing. They had to go to this woman, find her in the terminal, because they knew which flight she was on. She just had checked in and stuff like that, and tell her that she wasn't able to fly because she smelled so bad. And they had other people, like, they had to have a manager go up and find and just go and talk to her, catch the smell, and then be like, wow, I really can't put you on a plane like this. Can you imagine?
No.
Being to tell somebody that, as like a perfect stranger who has already paid for their flight, like, I'm sorry, but you have to go home and shower before you can fly today.
See, that's the thing. Like, I guess get fired, because I would say, if they said, listen, Matt, this is it. Like, you either do it or you go home. I would say, look, I cannot approach a strange woman and tell her she stinks. Like, I can't do it. Just let me go handle bags or something. Like, you know.
But you want to need a couple of toilets cleaned? I'll do that.
Absolutely.
I just can't go tell this person she smells too bad.
That's, oh my God. Yeah. Well, and there's stuff like that. And then, you know, like the salad dressing and this woman who, my brother worked for a think tank for a while in, Washington, D.C. And, this woman would, like, she was scrapbooking was her big thing. You know, she would, like, go home and scrapbook on the weekends. Like, I don't exactly know what that means. I guess it involves, like, cutting out pictures or putting pictures in an album. Yeah, so she would tell people about this.
I'm sure it involves cats also somehow. It always seems to me, like, scrapbooking, yes, that person has cats.
And I would imagine crying. I would put crying.
Scrapbooking goes great with cats and tears.
Crying. Like, not right away, but as the scrapbooking nears an end and the person starts looking through the scrapbook, crying. Especially when some wine is involved, you know, it's. Well, that's the impression that my brother got, because, you know, she was divorced. She was recently divorced or had been divorced in the past year, and that hadn't gone well, and she had two little boys, and so she brought her scrapbook into work. I don't think just once. I think she would do that fairly frequently. I don't know, frequently, but once is too much. Like, you don't bring your scrapbook.
You've already crossed the line.
Right. And Paul just happened to catch my brother on the picture. It was a station wagon or a minivan, and it was packed full of stuff, and there were two little boys in it, and it was in front of a house, and the caption read, "This was the day she moved out of the house because of the divorce." And the the caption read, "The day Daddy stopped loving us."
Oh, God, that just hurt me on the inside. Oh, Jesus.
Us. Like, the boys, too. She's including the children in this divorce.
She's taking everyone down with her. Good for her.
Which I've always thought that the kid, like, specifically, you're supposed to tell the kids, listen, this is not about you. We both love you very much. It's just between us, whatever. No, 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 no. She's dragging them right into the muck.
She went right to the heart of the issue.
Yeah.
She doesn't love any of us anymore.
And is showing it at work. Right. And brings it to work to show people.
And, oh, my God. That is...
Yeah.
That is fantastic. I mean, I'm horrified and also a little proud of that person. That's pretty crazy.
Putting it out there. Wow. Well, the last thing I'll mention is, because this coincidence was kind of too much, I was doing a podcast with my friend Joe. He works for a big telecommunications company. I won't name which one. In Manhattan. He lives in Brooklyn. He mostly telecommutes now, but at this time he was going into the office. They'd hired some guy, and the guy just wasn't really cutting the mustard, and he was kind of off. He was like kind of spacey in a way, like he wasn't really connecting with what he was supposed to be doing. And Joe, you know, sat him down a couple of times and said, like, look, you know, you figured the sales on this incorrectly, or you didn't figure this correctly, and the guy would kind of nod and say yeah, but he wasn't getting it. Like, he just wasn't, you know, he was sort of like, well, it'll make more sense in a second, but he also wore this crystal around his neck, which was apparently very important to him. And I know there's people who, I don't know, something about the energy of the crystal, and,
right.
You know, I think, like people use it in healing and stuff like that, too, I think. Like, there's some sort of, I hesitate to say legitimacy, but it's not like he's not the first person to do the crystal thing.
Right, gotcha.
Yeah, so I think everybody probably sort of attaches their own whatever to it. So, finally, he's not catching on. So now Joe's manager is like, okay, well, I'm going to bring him in for the talk. We're going to tell him that, you know, we're going to redefine, or there's some corporate speak they use to tell you you're kind of on your way out if you don't get it together. So he sits the guy down. He's running through the spiel, and the guy goes, well, you have to understand that I'm a Heb. And the manager, of course, says, what's a Heb? And he goes, a highly evolved being. is what he says to his manager. And his manager, you know, because he's very professional and whatnot, I don't even think he bothered to ask what that meant. See, me, I'm all about, like, I would shove everything aside and be like, okay, I want to hear what this is. You've got 10 minutes.
We need to table every other conversation.
That's right.
Get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, hold the conference call. I want to hear what this is. And he was soon thereafter. Yeah, he was soon thereafter let go, and they never found out. But I was like, well, maybe he was on such a plane that you guys couldn't understand all his moves, you know?
Right? That's, maybe they should have been let go.
You are a lesser evolved being, an LED. So, you know.
That's kind of what I take from that. When you said that, I was just like, man, so is he just automatically saying, like, I am above you? I am a highly evolved being. Like it's almost like an insult to everybody else that he says that to, because they are not.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because I am, right.
Moderately evolved, I guess?
Right. An MED, moderately evolved being. my what I envision is that he enrolled in an online course for $69.95, and then part of the deal was they sent him this crystal that's probably plastic and cost $2 for them. that's what I'm envisioning.
Either but, that, or he's just physically evolved more somewhere. Like, maybe he has, like, a prehensile tail. And maybe he just... And, you know, he didn't mean it mentally. Just...
Well...
Keep his pants on, and it made it hard for him to work.
Right. Well, the thing that caught my attention, I was talking to my friend Chris Miller up in Canada. He lives in Montreal, and he works for this, like, credit card services company. I'm not exactly sure what they do. Very much that corporate sales culture. And they had a guy in there, and he brought in a crystal, and he would set it on the ledge in the sunlight so it would gather its energy back throughout the day. It's what he explained to people. And that, like, this is what it was. And so I was like, all right, whatever. So he was also a bit of a head case. And Chris said, just hearing the guy talk about this and that, he finally asked the office manager, who dealt with the guy more directly, said, like, has he gone through a nasty divorce? And she goes, how did you know that? And that's what this was all about. This crystal was to sort of re-energize his self-esteem, and I guess his wife had left him or something like that. So,
you know what he should do? He should start scrapbooking.
that's right. I'll show her. Look at this book of scrap memories I've got. This is amazing stuff. All right, well, that's great. We're over 45 minutes, so that's pretty good there.
Nice.
So, I will draw this to an end, but I definitely want to do it again. It was great.
Yeah, definitely. I was actually, a friend of mine messaged me as we're on it. She was just like, what's up? And I was just like, what did I write back to her? Sorry, I was writing to somebody as I was talking to you, but I just wrote, I'm doing a really fun podcast right now. That's all I gave to her.
So. Nice, nice, good. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, let's definitely set up another time to do another one.
Definitely. That sounds awesome.
All right, Pat. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.